Okay. So the central question is, if you have two countries or two civilizations that go to war with each other, so who has the right to the spoils of war? That's the central question I want to discuss.
Isn't it the winner?
What?
The winner.
What do you mean? So does the winner have a right to the spoils?
I was just joking. He's the only one.
The victor belongs to the spoils.
The loser can't get it.
Okay, well, since the Geneva Convention, how are you an expert in international law? Okay, since the Geneva Convention, from what I understand, is that the seizing of civilians' property in battle is considered to be a violation of international law. That's what I get. You could have reparations from a government, but to loot a private citizen's property is a violation of international law. That's what I gather. But the question is, halakhically, what does halakha say about this? And the question becomes very practical, especially after... Well, forget about the Six-Day War. That's a little more politically charged. But, you know, used to have all these Jewish communities in Europe. And then after World War II, even after the First World War, so what's the Nazis came and they destroyed these communities. And you'd have all these Sfarim, you know, a decade later, that would end up in bookstores on the Lower East Side. And who has the right to the Sfarim? Right, so I come, I buy a Sefer. And then, you know, someone says, oh, my grandfather, look, it's my grandfather's name is in that Sefer from Poland. So who has the right to the Sefer? And it's last year there was a story that the Wall Street Journal covered. I don't know if anybody saw it. That YU had purchased some manuscripts like in the 60s or something. And then recently the great-great-grandson of the Mechaber, of the author of those manuscripts, said, oh, that's like my grandfather's Svarim, and they were taken during the war. Well, taken from his library, so we have a right to it. So YU ended up giving the Svarim back to the family. But Al Pi Din, who has the right? So if you think that, you know, that the victors of a war have a right to the spoils, so you might say the Jews in those Eastern European communities lost their title to all those Svarim and all those assets. So we'll get, yes, that's the question.
Right.
And you can say something similar about art, right? You have all this discussion now about what about the looted art during the Holocaust. Who Al Pi Din has the right to that property? Okay. So I want to analyze that question. So looking at the Marma Komos, we begin with the Gemara in Gittin on Daf Lamed Zayin Amud Beis. Two Gemaras are central to this discussion. This is the first. Amar Reish Lakish. Minayin le'ovei kochavim shekana asa ovei kochavim. How do we know that a non-Jew could purchase or own another non-Jew? You know, a non-Jew could have a non-Jewish slave. Gemara says, Amar Reish Kal V'chomer, ovei kochavim Yisrael kone. If we know from the Torah that a Jew could own a non-Jewish slave, Obed kochavim lo kol shekein. And of course, a non-Jew should be able to own a fellow non-Jew. Okay, it's not our discussion. The ema hani mili bekaspa. Maybe that's only true if the non-Jew purchases the other non-Jewish slave. So through a transaction of kesef, you could have a non-Jew owning a fellow non-Jew. Aval bechazaka lo. Maybe it shouldn't apply to chazaka. And Tosas here says, just keep your finger in the place, but look at the next source as well. Here, chazaka means like brute force. Right? So you have one nation that conquers another nation. How do we know that the victor now has property rights in the persons of the defeated civilization? Right? They take them as their servants. So Amar Papa, back in the Gemara, Amon Umoav Taharu B'Sichon. What happened? We know that Hashem tells Bnei Yisrael when they're leaving Mitzrayim and they're traveling in the Midbar, they're not allowed to attack Ammon and Moab, right? Does this sound familiar? Hashem says, I gave Ammon and Moab to the children of Lot, so you're not allowed to attack them. But we know from later in Tanakh that Bnei Yisrael ended up living or conquering certain cities that once belonged to Ammon. So how is that possible? Hashem tells them you're not allowed to conquer Ammon, and yet Bnei Yisrael end up in their lands. Look here very briefly at this, at the Pesukim on the page one. Devarim Perek Beis. Vayomer Hashem Elai, Al Tatsar Es Moav, Al Tiskar Bam Bil Mochama. Don't attack them. Ki lo etein lecha me'arto Yerusha, ki levnei lot nasati es er Yerusha. As our Yerusha. Those cities belong to Ammon and Moab, you have no right to attack them. Okay? Same thing for Ammon. And then, if you look in the very bottom of page one, in Bamidbar Chaf Aleph, Sichon, a separate nation, doesn't let Bnei Yisrael go through its territories. So Bnei Yisrael end up attacking them. This is Pasuk Chaf Dalid. And in Pasuk Chaf Hey, it says, Vayikach Yisrael es kol ha'arim ha'ela. So Bnei Yisrael seizes Sichon's territory. And on top of page 2, the Torah tells us, Ki cheshbon ir Sichon melech ha'emorihi. Vehu nilcham b'melech Moab harishon. Bnei Yisrael conquered territories from Sichon, which Sichon won from Moab. And if you look in Shoftim, Parak Yud Aleph, later in Nach, Bnei, this is 300 years later, Ammon now comes to attack Bnei Yisrael. Yiftach says, why are you attacking us? And he says, oh, because you stole our land 300 years ago. And he says, I didn't steal your land. I conquered it from Sichon, and Sichon conquered it from you years ago, but we never took your land. So the Gemara, what the Gemara here, turn back to page 1, what the Gemara here is pointing out is that Bnei Yisrael weren't allowed to attack Ammon and Moab, but they were allowed to seize the land that Sichon had already taken from Ammon and Moab. So what do you see from here? That clearly it was no longer considered to be the land of Ammon and Moab. Ammon and Moab ki haru b'Sichon. It became permissible for Bnei Yisrael to seize the land because it was no longer Ammon and Moab's. So what do we see? Right, we see that basically Ammon and Moab lost title to their property. There was a loss of title through the battle.
Not really.
But that's what the Gemara is pointing out, right?
Yeah, but
and that's why it's permissible.
Just like Eretz Yisrael has a certain kedusha.
Yeah.
Hashem labeled this as you're not allowed.
But that's what the Gemara is saying is not true, right? The Gemara is saying once Ammon loses title through losing the battle, it's permissible for Bnei Yisrael to seize it.
Hashem is his guard, right? Now.
Right.
They learned that they have an obligation to protect the integrity. Even if they seize it in war, they have custody for the protection of the true owner.
But it doesn't sound that way. It sounds like it's...
No, it doesn't sound that way, but you could have learned
that. Right. That's like post-Geneva conventions. You would say, no, you're not... You don't gain title on the property. You just have to protect it in the interim or something.
Right. Until there's
Okay, so from the Gemara, it sounds right now not that way. Right. It sounds like the victor gains title.
It's also the sense is that if I'm on a Moab to attack Israel, Israel would be able to take
Israel. Oh, so 1 second. Okay, so what happens... So this is a case where a non-Jew seizes property from a non-Jew. So go back to the Gemara on the top of page 1, the last line of the Gemara. Ashkechon obekochavim obekochavim. So we have proof that a non-Jew gains title in the spoils of war from a fellow non-Jew. Obekochavim Yisrael minalan. Can a non-Jew gain title in a Jew, gain ownership over a Jew and his property through battle? Dechsiv vayesh mimenu shevi. When the Knanim attack Bnei Yisrael, also in Sefer Ben Midbar, it says that they seize the captive from Bnei Yisrael. And the Gemara says, from the fact that the Torah calls this Jew a captive, you see that a non-Jew could gain property rights in a Jew's property through winning a battle as well. Okay? So this Gemara seems to demonstrate that the victor of a war gains property rights in the spoils. Look at the Tajbates, the third source on page 1. Tajbates citing this Gemara, and we'll come back to this Tajbates later. So look at the underlined section. The im gufo shel Yisrael nikne b'shvi, if he could gain property rights in a Jew himself, he could have a Jewish servant, b'mamono lo kol shekein. Right, all the more so, of course, he could gain property rights in the homes that he seizes and the metaltlin and the mobilia that he seizes. Right, so it would seem to follow from this Gemara. A Jew comes back to Poland after World War II and he says, oh, I want to take back my property. Right, the non-Jews could appeal to this Gemara and say, well, it was won in World War II. You lose your property rights to your assets that you owned prior to the Milchama. Any questions?
They weren't in battle. The civilians weren't in battle.
So we'll have to define what constitutes exactly a war. Right, what defines Kibosh Milchama?
Also, Poland was vanquished by the Nazis. If you want to make this argument, assuming that the Nazi... Why did the Polish people wind up losing their rights?
So it could be, the most important thing to demonstrate first is that the at least the Jew loses his property rights when he loses the battle. Right? Now it's a separate question, who could gain the property rights now? right? If you know, the homes are abandoned, so who has the right to seize it? But it seems that once you argue that the victor gains property rights, then the prior owner has no claim at all.
Well, that means that all of Torah.
So we'll have to define. So we'll have to define what a mochama is. Right. So we'll have to define. We'll get that at the end.
That would mean that all of Poland, since the Nazis conquered all of Poland, that nobody had any rights in Poland, Jew or non-Jew, correct?
Right. Well, you would say then that when the Allies reconquered at the end, they're the ultimate victors, and the Allies gain property rights.
They should do what they want.
And they could, right. However they decide to redistribute, that would be the just distribution.
Is there any potential here to how Cornelius Swirl collected all the riches of Egypt? Either
so I'm going to come to that at the end, yeah.
Or after the Yom Sof.
So I'm going to make that suggestion at the end. But I've never seen anyone who makes that connection. I say, oh, the Jews won it through Kibush Mahama.
But it wasn't a
Mochama.
Right.
Hashem
gave it. Well, how do you define
Mochama? Right. That's what Harold's pressing us on. How do you define Mochama?
According to the Torah, the Egyptians were charmed by the Jews and literally gave
it. Right. It was a gift. Oh, right. So we'll see that some Rishonim are when we speak about the mechanism of how this Kibush Mochama works, Rabbi Tom's going to try to argue that it's almost like a voluntary transfer. Okay. We'll see that soon. Okay. What?
They don't have to pay. Then what do they have to pay back?
Reimbursements? I mean, like the Poles seize the Jewish property, but they're obligated to reimburse you for it. Yeah, we'll see that in a minute. Okay? Right now, we just have this Gemara. Let's look at a second Gemara. Turn here to page 3. We have a Pasuk in Yeshaya. Okay? There's a third source on page 3. The pasuk here is predicting that Sancheriv came and he sent the Asar Shvatim into exile. Right, he sent them into Galus, and the Yeshaya predicts that in Lasid Lavo the Jews are going to come and they're going to exact revenge against Sancheriv. And it says, "V'usaf shilalchem, osef hechasil. You will gain the loot shlal. You will gain the booty of the spoils of war, in the same way that a grasshopper gathers its food. Kimashak gave him shokekbo, and you're going to come raining down on Sancheriv's property like a roaring river." It is a pasuk in Yeshaya. The Gemara in Sanhedrin Tzadi Dalad and Beis Darshins, the next source. Usaf shalachem usaf hachasil. Amar lahem navi liyisrael. Isfu shalachem. You'll regain your property from. You'll seize the spoils from Sancheriv. Amar lo. Levazos o lachlo. Does that mean that we're going to be able to keep the spoils that we take from Sancheriv? Or does it mean that we're going to have to give it away? Okay. And Rashi. If you look at Rashi, keep one finger on the place. The next source, Rashi. Lachlo klacherim masha anu sholalim. Aval anu asurim ba'oso shalom. Maybe we're not allowed to actually use the spoils. Shemamon shebazazu me'aseres ha'shvatim me'urabo. De'ika mishum gezo. What happens? Sancheriv exiled the Ten Shvatim, and now when we come and we seize the spoils from Sancheriv, maybe we're taking Jewish property as well, so maybe we're not allowed to keep it.
It's mashma, right? It's no longer Jewish property though, because Sancheriv took it in war.
Well,
it's
that's okay, so that's so what the Gemara doesn't answer that yet, right? So turn back to the Gemara. Amar Lahem, the Navi responds, Ke Asaf Hachasil, Ma Asaf Hachasil, Kol Echad Ve Echad La'atzma, just like a grasshopper. Each grasshopper keeps whatever produce it takes. Af shalalchem kol echad ve'echad la'atzmo. Each Jew, when you go and you tax on Sancheriv, you'll be able to keep. Amru lo v'halo mamon aseres ha'shvatim u'rabo. Hi, it's illicit Jewish money because the aseres ha'shvatim own this. It's like saying, imagine if you're invited to Eastern Europe and you say, oh, take whatever svarim are left over after the war. And you say, I can't take it. It belongs to the Jews who lived here before the war. So amar lahem, kemeshek gavim shokek bo. The pasuk compares it to you to come down like raining, like roaring rivers. Ma gavim halalu malinas ha'adam itum l'tahara. Just like a river can make someone who's tamei tahar, who works as a mikvah. Af mamonam shel Yisrael, kivan shenafal biyad gayim miyad tiher. So too, the Jewish money, the aseres ha'shvatim, once Sancheriv exiled them, it becomes permissible. Kidra papa damra papa amo nemo av tiaru besichon. The same principle that we saw in the Gemara in Gittin, that spoils that are won through war are now permissible.
How did they learn for Jewish property from Amud Mor?
Yeah, so it's true that the Gemara actually in Gittin said That works for Gentile-Gentile wars. But the Gemara quoted a separate pasuk of Vayesh Mimenushevi that a non-Jew could gain property rights in Jewish property as well. Okay, so you have two Gemaras. Good? Two Gemaras that establish this principle. But what's the mechanism through which it works? And what's the basis through which the victor gains title in the conquered's property? Okay, so what suggestions do we have? Okay, yes.
Is it stealing?
Well, okay, so should it be stealing? So let's look at the first suggestion. Okay, so that we'll discuss in a second. Yes, so we'll talk about stolen property in a second.
Right, there's an understanding in the context of a war that you have transfer, you have population transfer, you have property transfer, whether you go back to various international...
It was understood that these are the norms.
Right.
The spoils go to the victor.
Right.
Okay, so we'll see that. If that's going to be your argument, then I would point out that nowadays, after the Geneva Convention, where the international norms are not that way, right, you're not allowed to seize civilian assets, then this halacha should change.
Well,
if this halacha is grounded in a principle that this is just a universal norm.
But what
would
that be if you're the aggressor and not the aggressor? If you're the aggressor and you're the vanquished, you're just sitting there
passive, innocently.
Somebody comes and decides to take you over, maybe that's a whole other ball.
Right. Yeah.
So what's war?
Yeah, we'll have to define that at the end. And we'll see, some of you have very, very liberal definitions of what constitutes a milchama. But obviously, how you define milchama will depend on what principle is underlying the basis of this kenyan. So one view in the Rishonim is that this is really based on yish. Yish comes from the sugya of aveda. Okay, if you lose an object, so the halacha says that at a certain point, you forfeit your property rights to that object also. Or you drop a dollar in a marketplace. So if you give up on your ability to retrieve it, you despair, that's yish, then you essentially relinquish your property rights to it, and whoever picks it up is now kone. He is now the owner of that thing. So the principle for yish is, and here's an example in the Rambam on the bottom of page 3, Zeha klal ba'aveda, this is the principle for lost objects, kol davar she'ein bo simin, if it's not something that is you could give a simin for, you can't prove it's yours, Kivin she'avad v'yadu bo ha'baylim she'avad, once it's lost and the owner knows that it's lost, ha'reizeh b'chezka senis ya'yishu mimenu b'aylov, so then there's a presumption that the owner gave up. So like if you lose a nail, you lose a pin, you lose a coin, because you can't really give a simin to retrieve it. These things are so universal. Okay?
The psychological thing.
Yeah. You give up.
No chance you're going to get it back.
Yeah, you psychologically you surrender because you know you're never going to get it back.
No,
it's not a seizure.
No,
right. Okay, so we'll get to whether the analogy is good. Let's just first introduce the principle of yish.
No, but it's
okay.
Not individual psychology. My psyche isn't different from yours. It's universally.
Well, we'll see. We'll see about universal. We'll see whether it's universal or not.
Okay, so in this case, if I drop a dollar in Madison Square Garden, I'm not getting that.
Psychologically.
Okay, universally psychologically, mentally. Okay, but you said practically.
Right. Well, we'll see. Let's say the person drops the coin and he says, "Everybody, I'm not giving up. I'm not leaving Times Square until I retrieve my quarter." What happens in that case? We'll see in a second. Okay. So kol davar sheyesh bo simin, this is the Rambam, the next halacha, top of page 4. If it's easily identifiable, kigon simla, it's an item of clothing, ubehema. It's your pet dog, right? So if Bob runs away, you're not miyayish. Harez the bechezka shelo nisyayishu b'aylov. There's a presumption that the owner didn't despair. Shehare daitav tluya litein simanim. He knows that he'll just identify it and he'll retrieve it. Halacha dalit. V'chein im matza davar sheyesh bo simen. So it's right now in the Rambam we have, if it has no identifiable traits, there's a presumption that there's yish. If it has identifiable traits, there's a presumption that there's no yish. Halacha dalit, v'chein im matza ba davar sheyesh bo simen, if it's identifiable, but you found it by yamu v'nahar, right, it came, it rode up with the waves on the beach, o b'makom sherubo gayim, hareza b'chezka shenis yayishu mimenu b'aylov. Then there's a presumption that the b'aylim despaired. So if you're walking in the beach and, some article of clothing washes up, you could keep it, because even though the owner could identify it, the fact that it came through the ocean creates a presumption that the owner gave up. So summary shown him here try to argue that this is the principle of kibush milchama. The conditions of war create such a condition of chaos and uncertainty that the owner despairs over his ability to retrieve the item. And he forfeits, like losing a dollar in Times Square. You're running away from Eastern Europe when the conquerors are coming. Everyone's miyayish on their nechassim. Okay, looking at example in the Gemara in Bava Metzia on Chafez and Beis, again, just the principle of Yish. Third source on page 4. Tashma. Da'am Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Yishmael Ben Yehud Tzadok. Minayim la'aveda she'shotfa nahar she'hi muteres. How do we know that if a lost item washes up on the river, it's permissible to take? The Torah says, v'chein tasa l'chamoro, v'chein tasa l'simlaso, v'chein tasa l'chol aveda sechicha asher tova mimenu umatsasa. The obligation to return a lost item is only if it's umatsasa. It could be refound. Mi she'avuda haimenu umetsuya etzel kol adam. It's only if it's lost from him, but findable by anybody else. Yatzazu she'avuda mimenu ve'enu metsuya etzel kol adam. If something washes up along the river, it's not findable by anybody. So then we assume that there is going to be Yish. Okay? Rashi, commenting on our Gemara in Gittin, the source for Kibush Milchama, what does Rashi say? Third source from the bottom. Bechazaka, kigon shavoy, like a captor, shehichzikbo, v'kina'o bechezkas Yish. He acquires the spoils through the presumption of Yish, kishehefgero rabo, the owner gives up, kishenis yayish haimenu. So Rashi seems to be interpreting that yiyush is what underlies the kinyan kibush mochama. The Meiri in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the second Gemara that we saw as the basis for this halacha, says, mamon shel Yisrael shenimsar biyad goyim, af al pi shelo kedin balu yadam, even though it was illicit because they stole it through war, hoel vinis yayishu mimenu, mutter l'chol adam. Again, he's invoking yiyush.
This is a subjective test. If the Nazis come in and take the Renoir and put it in the Berlin Museum, you're not getting the Yish.
Why not?
Because you know where it is. It didn't fall overboard into the Yam.
Well, maybe we'll see. Okay, look at. Okay, but look. Look at the Marsha, the next source. The Marsha again commenting on this Gemara in Sanhedrin. This is the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Look at the second line after the V'chulei. V'ein atem tzrichim l'troach u'lahachzir lehem. You don't have to try to give back this property to the Aseres HaShvatim. Shekvar tiher biyad ovei kochavim midin yiyush bailim. Kidin hamatzil min hanahar. It's like you pick it out of a river. So why should a river have less yiyush than the conditions of war? You drop your Renoir into the Atlantic. Or... you barely expect to get out of this war alive. Your community is destroyed. Your family is destroyed. You don't think you're miyayish from your painting.
War is the big, no. How many centuries passed from the Aseret Shvatim to when this happened?
Well, it's many.
You're not even talking about the same generation.
Right, many generations later.
So the owner himself certainly is not miyayish.
Does the Nahar of En Yom override his simanim?
Yes, yeah, that's clear in the Rishonim. And not only that, the Rush holds that even if the Bailim, look here in the second source on page 5, well, look at the first source, because Machlokas Rishonim, what happens if you drop the Renoir into the Atlantic, and the Bailim is standing there saying, I'm not Miyayish. Right? He's screaming, I'm not Miyayish. So the Rambam says, Koros va'avanim ve'etzim v'chayote behen sheshat from hanar, im nis yayishu ha'bailim mehen arei elu mutarim, v'hein shel matzilan. V'im eino yodea im nesyayishu lo nesyayishu chayev l'hachzir. V'ein tzarech lomar im hayu habayilim merad v'machareihem. The Rambam assumes that if the owner is still trying to pursue, right, he's running along the coast to try to retrieve his item, then there's no yish. Right? Because he's still trying to hunt it down. So it's not an objective criterion.
Not a big
chiddush. The chiddush here is the Rush, who argues, next source, V'chein ha'yir Rashba omer ha'matzal min ha'ari u'min ha'dov u'min ha'namar u'min ha'bardalis u'mizuto shel yam u'mishlulis shel nahar harei elu shelo b'mdei sha'abaylen mesyayishin mehen afilu omed v'tzaveach. Even if the owner is standing there and screaming that he's not giving up, nasa ketzaveach al beso shel nafal. It's like somebody who's screaming, oh, like while his house is falling. meaning it's futile. Right? There's Yiyush because we have some objective criterion for what Yiyush should be. And we know he's not going to get it back.
One could argue that Yiyush on the basis of Melchama is not quite the same because the nature of war is one country wins that year, next one other country comes back and takes it back. So
right, but
be more, no, there are borders that will change every 2 years because this country got strong, this country got strong. So it might be that a
right, but what about retrieving your particular property?
I'd say the top one you might be basics, but real property should be able to take
the example of the honorable anyway. The lion destroys the property. The Nazis preserve it so they can show it.
I would say mine is the example of one country coming out that makes it even more strong. That's more yours. There's no certainty.
Right, it's always going back and forth. That even if the Poles take it, then the Lithuanians will get it a few years later, and then. So before we get to so we'll get to that in a minute. But I'm saying right now we see the Rishonim who think that the underlying principle here is Zutel Shel Yam, Ushluli Shel Nahar. When the conquerors come, it says if all your property was thrown into a river, right? The conditions are such that there's a presumption of Yish. And then it will depend on this machlokas we've shown him, is Yish subjective or objective? Right, that seems to be what we have right now. Okay.
But that also ignores human nature. Because human nature is that if you've been deprived of something that you've inherited or made an effort to acquire, that you're simply going to say, you know what, I don't care, I'm never coming back to this.
So you're pro-Yish.
No, I'm anti.
Oh, you're anti. You're just saying you're not going to give up.
Well, I mean, you know, the examples of human nature are exactly, you know.
Right, well, so let's talk about mundane items. Let's talk about your white shirt that's hanging in your closet. Are you miyayish on the white shirt that's hanging in your closet?
There's probably an inflection point somewhere.
Right, your Honda Accord that's sitting in your parking lot. Are you miyayish on your Honda Accord after Muhammad? Maybe you're not miyayish on your Rembrandt or your Renoir.
Or your real estate.
But let's talk about do the conquerors have a right to your mundane assets? Let's take those as a simple case.
They have a right as long as they're, you know, might make an international law, might makes right.
Okay.
I also think there's a historical lens. In the period of time that the Rishonim were talking, we're always influenced by what we're living through. If there was war, even your Rembrandt was lost.
It was gone.
There was no chance of getting it. In a 20th and 21st century lens,
you could retrieve it.
We have the option.
So you're saying then war was like Zutel Shel Yam. It was like dropping it into the Atlantic.
You could go down to the Titanic
right?
It was, and retrieve it. And
in the Gemara day, it comes to what he says, perfect. They had just lost it based on Mikdash, right? So the guys that is going to be our... We're not on that. We hope every day it's going to be another day's next loss. In that context,
right.
Despite that, despite losing all the Canaan, they still signed it.
You weren't getting your property.
Right. It ain't coming back, right? It's these the crusaders came, they sent all the loot back home to where they came from. So right now, who has the property rights in the spoils of war should depend on whether there was Yish, or it should depend on whether Yish is objectively or subjectively defined. Okay? That's what we're holding right now. So we'll get to whether it should be Gezel. These Rishonim seem to assume it's not Gezel. It's like an Aveda. It's like a lost item where the finder has no obligation to return it whatsoever. The Meiri? Oh, he means that even though it was through the conquest of war, which wasn't justified, Sancheirev just attacked the Aseres HaShvatim.
How can we compare this to loss? Loss is like a passive act of
God. So we'll see that Rishonim don't like that. But I think to justify these Rishonim, they'll say that when the Crusaders are coming and everyone's fleeing for their lives, so it's almost as if the conditions of chaos precede the conditions of theft. Meaning it's not like they stole it and then you give up. It's like you first give up because you're fleeing for your life, and then they sweep in and seize your assets.
You're gripped by the danger. It's not like you just go to sleep at night and you're comfortable in your house and someone breaks into your house and stays in red water. Hey, you're running from
exactly.
College.
It's like Hurricane Sandy comes and then the thieves go wild.
An act of another human on my property.
Yeah. So we'll see. A lot of Rishonim will take that view. These Rishonim are assuming. Well, we'll see that. That's to be attention in a second. Okay? We'll talk about Yefas Tohar. Yeah, so we'll get to Yefas Tohar. Okay. Let me just point out that there's one big exception here. Many Rishonim think that there's no such thing as Yush on Svarim. No, not because they wrote them. Look here at the Rimigash for a second. The Rimigash is the Rebbe of the Rambam's father. This is the Shita Mekubetas Nabam Metzia Chavdal and Amabez. So look here at the first line of the Rimigash. End of the first line.
Rambam's father's Rebbe?
Yeah, Maimon's Rebbe. Okay. This is on page 5, in the middle of the page. The Shita Mekubetas is quoting the Rimigash. V'harav Rabbi Yosef Alevi Ibn Migash Kasa B'tshuva She'elav Zeh L'shono Hash'elav Atshuva Mu'atakin Miloshin Arabi. So you were in Arabic and the Shita Mekubetas translates it for us. Reuven Hayelo B'beis Shimon Metaltlin Usvarim. So, I lent my svarim to Mitch, and they're in Mitch's house. V'yatza ish echad me'es ha'melech al Shimon, u'bizzu kol nechasav. Right, and then the king sends his thugs to go and loot Mitch's home. V'lo hiniach lo klum, v'lokach ha'melech es kol habiza b'chlala, he stole everything from Mitch's home, u'machra, v'kanu mimena yehudim v'goyim b'rshus ha'melech. And the king had he resold them on his own. V'nimkar b'chlala kol masha hayel l'ruven b'beis Shimon. So they asked the Rimigash, Yodienu, im yesh l'ruven lachzer v'likach ha'svarim shekanu b'nei adam. Do I now have to purchase, do I have to repurchase my svarim from the people who purchased them from the king who looted it from Mitch's home? V'im yachzer l'lokham, im yesh lo l'froa masha nasan hakone behen. And do I have to reimburse the people who purchased them from the king's resale? After all, they, kind of bought them with the legitimacy of the imprimatur of the king. So, it's not clear from the
case. They were svarim. They knew they weren't the melech.
Right. So Yevayer Lanu calls that beer shalom.
Yeah.
So what does the Rimigash say? Tshuva. Amnam hasvarim ein lomar behem chazaka shebaylam nesiyai shemehem. When it comes to svarim, there's never a presumption of yush. Ela imkein he'idu shnei edim sheshamu menu ze b'firish. Unless two witnesses could testify that they heard me despair.
That's because this was the
Rambam's fail. Now let's see why. V'chol od lo zachar ze b'firish, and so long as they don't hear explicitly that he was miyayish, ein lanu ladun shenis yayish mehen, afa pisha haya hadavar b'maymar hamelech, she'ein moche b'yadav ein mevatu gzeirasa. Right? Even though the CIA and the FBI are the ones who are behind it, and no one could stop them. Still, there's no presumption of Yush. Lefisha hasfarim einam ruuyim kim liyehudim. What are the goyim going to do with Hebrew svarim? We all know that there's no market to resell them on. Ve'ein lahem mechira ki im lahem. Eventually, they'll make their way back into a Jewish community. Ve'danin shebalein hayasomech im bol yad Yisrael yivayar shehein shelo. So the owner knows that Jewish books will always make their way back to a Jewish community, because that's the only market for Svarim. So he knows that once it makes it back into a Jewish community, people will identify it's her. So this is, maybe he's writing in Arabic lands, right, before the church started. Yeah. So he argues that there's no such thing as Yush for Svarim, because the owner always assumes that it'll make its way into a bookstore on the Lower East Side. Yeah, so then there's Yush. But he's saying, in particular, Svarim, right, where the assumption is they'll make it back to a Jewish community and then he'll be able to retrieve it, then there's no Yish.
Tosos made it the kana that you shouldn't go out and buy Svarim from Goyim, so there would be a mark.
Yeah, maybe.
He has his name in the safe.
Or, this is before publishing. Right, it's before publishing. It's not just like everybody has the same Vilna Shas. What?
Safe for Torah.
I mean, it depends how identifiable it was. People could identify it.
What is the predicate for this, that they're going to be preserved?
it'll make.
Why does it matter that they come back to Jews?
Because then.
Chance, he realizes there's a chance to retreat.
So there's no issue.
So if it's a Renoir, it's going to wind up in a museum.
So you might say the same thing for a Renoir, exactly.
No, part of the collection.
So it's not Sfarim, it's something that's not going.
His case is about Sfarim, right? But you could say if there's a limited, if there's a very limited market for something, and the market is Hamish enough that people know, oh, this Renoir once belonged to Mr. So and So in Europe.
That's a big second factor that Harold didn't really know. It's not just a matter of a limited market. It's a limited market, and they think people will be upfront and, you know.
It doesn't need to be Jews under this example.
Yes, it does.
Why does it need to come back to Jews?
Right. I think Harold's right. The real premise is that it's a limited market.
I don't think so.
No, I think it's a limited market.
Jews are going to return it to other Jews.
Right.
But you might say in the current art market, right, you really can't sell a stolen piece of art because everyone knows who it belonged to at some point. So there's no Yiddish.
That's not true today. There are private, there are private collectors
that buy stolen art and never...
So it would depend on these contingencies. Right? You might say that... Okay, so... So the point is like this. If we say that the principle here is really Yiddish, like an Aveda, so Yiddish wouldn't apply to Sfarim, and it may not even apply to these kind of lost art items, right? So it wouldn't help us for Sfarim or art.
I think it does, though. I mean, I think there's a context that the Jews are more honest than the non-Jews.
You can spend these things any way you want, because they're saying things off the top of their heads without, you know... I mean, look what the Rush says. The Rush says that if you lose something and there's a lion there, and somebody who has a whip and recovers it for you, he gets to keep it. I mean, do you think?
Why is that okay? A lion comes, he drags away a bar of gold.
Yeah, somebody who has
so he's not going to damage it.
Back.
Right.
Even
so who retrieves it?
How about a safer?
Who has title?
Steals a safer?
Same thing. Who has title to it? Did you have Yiddish or not? So the Rush is just saying that. Even if you're standing there and saying, I'm going to fight the lion to death, there's Yiddish. Because there's an objective criterion for Yiddish.
How about, can you give the Yiddish or Yiddish? Can you abrogate your waiver?
What do you mean abrogate your waiver?
I waived it when I saw the lion, but here it is in Joe's house.
So it's irrevocable.
It's irrevocable. Once you're Yiddish, you're Yiddish. You're forfeiting your property rights.
That's a good question.
No, you can law, you can withdraw your waiver.
Can you look at it and say that they believe in it's Sfarim, not as a monetary
value,
rather as
a
Yeah, but that's not what they're...
That transcends money,
Yeah, I mean, it's a nice idea. It's a nice idea, but that's not what the Rimi Gash is going for, something much more prosaic. Yeah, much more prosaic. And the proof is that, let me just... and after World War II, so there was a lot of question about Sfarim, and some Achronim argued that the presumption of the Rimi Gash and Tosfos, that there's no such thing for Yiddish b'Sfarim, doesn't hold in something like World War II. Why? I mean, saying even if in general there's no Yiddish on Sfarim, the conquest of the Nazis would create Yiddish on Sfarim. Why?
They burned the Sfarim.
So the presumption, exactly, the presumption that they would make their way back to a Jewish community was lost because they wanted to destroy everything. So this gets into a debate just about the Metzias. Some people said, no, that's not true. They wanted to create a Jewish museum in Prague and have all the... But it depends on this whether this presumption holds that there... Would there be Yiddish in this case or not?
But the key you see is that the example, I thought it was a war.
So we'll see. Some people think, and we'll see this at the end, some people think that anything that's state-sponsored has the status of kibush mochama. That's almost the definition. If it's a government, yeah. Right, because, right. Well, and we'll get to that. Okay. So this is all assuming that it's yush of zuto shel yam. It's like a lost item. And presumably the rationale is that, like, it's the chaos of war precedes the actual seizing of the assets. Many Rishonim don't like this idea. And they say, exactly as Dr. Shulman pointed out earlier, this is not like a lost, it's not like lost property, it's like stolen property. And the Gemara actually is explicit in a few places that when a thief comes and he steals your property, steals your car, so Yiyush alone is not sufficient to give him property rights in your car, because the Gemara says it's not like Aveda, because Aveda is Behetera Asal Yadeh. That comes to someone's rishus permissibly. He's walking along the shore. He finds your item and he takes it for himself permissibly. Gazela, when he goes in with illicit intentions to steal your property, that's isura asaliyade. And when something is stolen by isura, yiyush won't be sufficient to give him property rights. That's an explicit gemara in Bava Metzia. In Bava Kama, I'm sorry. So turn here to page 6. The Pnei Yoshua cites this gemara. This is the third source on the page. This is the Pnei Yoshua commenting on our gemara in Gittin. We saw Rashi said that our gemara works through yiyush. The Pnei Yeshua here says, "Hirni mosif lahafli." I'm astonished. "Dehich efshar lomar deshavoyo bekochavim kana sa'eved biyush." How could you say he acquires with yiyush alone? "The hakay malan yiyush kedi lo kani hecha divisura asiliyade." If he gains something illicitly, then yiyush is not sufficient to give him property rights. Okay. So what do we say to this? How might the kinyan work if it doesn't work through? And let me give you another. There's another problem that the Rishonim raise.
But you just call Kenyan Gezel.
Okay, so you want to say this is Gezel.
Yeah.
Okay, so in Halacha, how does a Gazlan gain property rights?
By taking it up and putting it in his pocket.
Yeah, by Yush plus Shinoi Rishon. Okay, so that means that the Gazlan himself never doesn't gain property rights usually. The Gazlan, he steals it. Doesn't belong to him. If the owner gives up and then the Gazlan gives it to a third party, that third party gains property rights. Why? Because for the third party, it's behetera asaliyade. Right? He gets it permissibly. So it's the conjunction of yiyush plus shinoi rishus, changing possession, that gives the third party property rights in the stolen item. Okay, but there's a big difference between aveda, retrieving a lost item, and a stolen item. First of all, no matter who ends up with the item, he has an obligation to at least return the value of the item to the original owner. In Aveda, it's permissible to keep it. The third party who retrieves the stolen item, he has to reimburse the owner, who the nigzal, the person who was stolen, he has to reimburse him for the value of the object. So let's say a ganav comes and steals Mitch's car, and I buy it from the ganav, not knowing he was a ganav. So I have property rights now, but I have a chiv to reimburse Mitch. I could sue the Gazlan for the value, but I have a chiv to reimburse Mitch for...
You get to keep the car.
I get to keep the car. But I have to reimburse you. So in Kibush Milchama, if it's working through Gezel, so then yes, the victors could keep the actual property, assuming there's Shinoi Rishus, somebody who bought it from the victors, but they have to reimburse the people who were conquered for... Right, that's reparations for the value of the property. It's Gezela.
Twice.
So I thought you didn't know it was stolen. You didn't know it was stolen. Yeah, that is the question. It happens to be, even if you knew it was stolen, you'd be able to keep it. But that's beside the point here. Right, the point is that once you have yish and shina rishis, you're allowed to keep it. You just have an obligation to reimburse the owner for the value. Okay. So if it's gazelle, you have to reimburse the owners.
An affirmative obligation, you have to call
them. What?
Yeah.
The Heshev Esak Zela. Yeah. And moreover, if it's Gezela, I want to know. So the Jews, you're part of an army. You're fighting for the Russian army, you know, in the early 20th century. And you conquer some country. You're a Jew and you're Shomer Torah Mitzvos. So is it permissible for you to take some item in the town that you conquered? So if it's Midin Aveda, of course it's permissible. And that's the whole point. There's yush, and now you could take it. If it's midin gezel, so yes, it's true that you could gain property rights, but it's property rights in the same way that you gain property rights in a stolen object. Right? So if you're a Jewish soldier, is it mutter or is it usser for you to take it? So there's a huge nafkamina whether we talk about aveda or gzela here. Okay. Okay, so
there were from Jews in the Kaiser's army.
Yeah, absolutely. They're from Jews in almost every European army over time.
Okay.
So look at the bottom of page 6. This is really the puzzle that the Ravid points out. So look, the Gemara in Gittin that we read says that the victor gains property rights in the assets of the conquered peoples. Right? In particular, he could gain an eved through the town. He could gain an eved through conquest on Milchama. Look at the bottom of page 6, the Ramban quoting the Ravid. Shavoy gufe mi kanile, in kanile. A captive, a captor gains property rights. Kasav harayvid, kashili tuva hechi kanile. How in the world does he gain these rights? Ikai bahade bedina, if this person who was conquered takes his captor to Bezdin, milo mapikle mitute yade, wouldn't Bezdin say that, of course he could go free? Mi matzi lememar le ha kanisi lecha bechazak, could he really say that I have legitimate property rights through conquest of war? Vi arik mine, if the captive runs away, mi matzi lahadure bedina, what, Bezdin's gonna enforce the recapture of the slave? V'agav also hu de mishtabibe. This is nothing but criminal activity. He's a thug, right? The captor is just holding him against his will. So me'ata, so let's say a Jew, ha Yisrael dezavna mine l'shem avdus ha ma'ishtabibo. Let's say a Jew now wants to buy the servant from the victor. So he is going to gain legitimate property rights? But yet, demashma dimidina kamar, the Gemara seems to suggest that he does. How could that be? Lekem bahade bedina, let the Eved just take the owner to Bezdin, the Leipuk, and Bezdin will tell him that he can go free. Daha Yisrael lav anasu, the Jew's not a thug. Umidina leko alev lomidi, and by law he has no claim on him. V'amar haravzal depruka dehach kusha lo it's barali shapir. The Rav says, I have no good answer to this question. I mean, the Rav is just challenging that, yes, a victor who's a criminal could keep the Eved, but that doesn't give him legal rights in the Eved. He's just challenging the assumptions that we've... What? He's challenging the assumptions that we've seen until now. Okay.
And he's calling it Gezel.
He's calling it Gezel. So the Ramban says, I have the answer to the Ravid's questions. Let's bite the bullet. Look at the top of page 7. Just look at the underlined section in the Ramban. Lema zedome, what's this like? Legozel eschavero behema okalim shehukone biyo shub inami bishine rishos. Yeah, it's like Gezela. It's like he stole him. And we know that a Goslin gains property rights. And look at the Meiri, who also quotes this Ravid. He says, I have the solution, the underlined section in the Meiri. Sha'af derech gezela kanu biyush. Yush in conjunction with Shine Rishus gives a Goslin property rights. V'damim hu chayiv lo. And ain't a chanami. The victor is obligated to reimburse the...
What is reimbursing?
The... owner of the property that he seizes.
Once he changes rishus, I thought the person who obtains the third party is mechayev.
So he says, let's say, yeah, the third party. So if you buy that sefer or any of that car from the conquerors, you're chayev to reimburse the original owners because this is nothing but gzela. So he's saying, look, the Gemara says you gain property. Well.
But he could sue the conqueror.
Right, he could sue the Ganav for reimbursement, but the person who I end up with your property, I have a chiyuv to reimburse you for it.
How about human property also?
So they'll say that it sounds like he would acknowledge that you wouldn't be able to gain property rights in a free human being, and he would interpret the Gemara as saying that you really gain property rights in the conquered's avadim. So if the goyim that you conquered owns slaves, then the victor gains property rights in the slaves, just like you would gain property rights in any other owned asset. But yet he has a chiv to reimburse the owner for...
Of the slaves.
Yes, to reimburse the owner. Because it's nothing but gzela.
And then the Ravid says that he would never enforce his transaction. He's talking about a different transaction, or he's talking about that?
The Ravid says, I don't know how to explain this Gemara. The Ravid throws up his hands. He says, I don't understand he could ever gain legal rights through Kinyan Muhammad. And the Ramban and the Meiri say, you gain legal rights, but it's really gezela in the same way that a Goslin gains legal rights.
So what does the Ravid say? Why stops the Ravid from holding that way?
So why doesn't the Ravid say this? Yeah. Okay.
No, but that's only, the answer to the Ravid is only after it's been transferred to somebody else.
It could be, that would be
so
one.
Maybe the Ravid is saying, well,
right, for gezela, it has to change possessions. Yeah. That could be. So, but there's a stronger objection to this reading.
The conqueror has rights, and
right.
the answer
this is true.
Only the next person
correct.
Has
But let me. So right now we've seen one view that is based off Aveda, another view that's based off Gezela. If it's Gezela, you need Yiyush and Shinei Rishus. If it's Gezela, it's really usher to take, it's illicitly gained property. If it's Gezela, the receiver has an obligation to reimburse the original owner. Many Rishonim think it's absurd to interpret this as Gezela. First of all, from the Gemara, it didn't sound that way. Right? It sounded like it's talking about a kinyan of kibush mochama. Second of all, and this is something that Mitch was pointing out earlier, what kind of property was the Gemara talking about? So avadim, eh? But what was the case of amon u'moav tiaru b'sichon?
Land.
Land. Okay, it sounds like it was talking about real estate. In halacha, we usually say that ein gzela lekarkos. Right? Real estate can never be stolen. Okay, yeah, and usually that applies to avadim. So yes, I could steal your car, I could steal your clothing, and I could gain property rights in those things. But karka is such that the ganav can never gain rights in it.
Why?
Tosa says all it is. What does it mean you're stealing property? It just means you're trespassing on someone else's property. So you're occupying someone's property. You're trespassing. Everybody knows this land belongs to Mitch. So you took over his house, you're a trespasser.
Baba Bas was all full of wait a second.
Absence of logic to that argument.
But they also quote Gzeres HaKasev. The Torah talks about Gzela for Kalim. It says it always refers to Gzela for Kalim, and the Gemara says it has to be Dever HaMetaltel. There could only be theft in movable items, not karka, which is permanent.
Because it can't be that you know who owns it, because an automobile is registered at the New Jersey Motor Vehicles, and you know who owns it.
Yeah, but you could always take it apart and sell it abroad, etc.
Right.
So you can't. Everyone here knows Mitch owns his property, so you occupy it for.
But in this day and age, you don't know who owns it.
That's exactly my point. If you know who owns
it's six corporations in the Cayman Islands.
Let me just tell a 30-second story. All right. Rafi Benaroya. He hates when I read this story. He went to a NATO conference in Stuttgart like 10 years ago, and Rommel's son is the mayor of Stuttgart, and he lives in a magnificent villa, and they're having a NATO dinner there hosted by the mayor, and the mayor takes everyone on a tour of the villa, and Rafael notices that there's some carvings in the doorways. This is a magnificent villa. Sir Mayor, Herr Mayor. What's the history of this villa? He says, well, you know, we appropriated it after the war. Family owned it. Apparently, they just left and they didn't want to have this property anymore. So we took it over.
Nah. So. Okay. let me flesh out this idea for a minute of Engzela Lekarkos. Here's one example.
The
Gemara in Sukkah.
The house may not be the same as the karka. Terms of, right?
Maybe.
That garden.
No, okay. But in terms of Inc. sales, the contract, maybe that
the house was on land.
It's not the improvements. It's not the improvements, though, maybe.
It could be. I think the Rishonim treat real estate including the house that's on it. The Gemara in Sukkah and Daf Lamed Amud Aleph tells us, for example, this is one example of Inc. sales of Karkos. This is the middle of page 7. Amalu Rav Huna Lahanu Avankri. So Rav Huna told those people who would sell Hadassim. These merchants who would sell hadassim. So you know you have to own your dalet minim for the first day of Sukkot. Right? You have to have ownership of your dalet minim. So Rav Huna would tell these sellers of hadassim, kizav nisu asa minachri, if you buy hadassim from a non-Jew, lo tigzizu atun, you shouldn't be the one to cut the hadassim from the land. Ela ligzazinhu inhu v'yavulichu. Let the non-Jew cut it and let him give it to you. Why? My taima. Stam nachri gazlini arasa ninhu. It could be that they stole the land. The karka in an exeles, but a gazlin can never gain property rights in stolen land. Hilkach ligzazinu inhu, let him be the one to cut it. Ki hechi de lahavi yuish bailim bi adaihu didhu. And he'll be considered the thief on the movable item, the cut hadasim. Mishine harishus bi adaihu. And once he gives it over to you, then there's shine harishus, so now you gain property rights. So the point is that the Goslin, seizing, this is true, but you may owe money, but at least you're Yotze, right, you're Yotze, your Dalet Minim.
I thought the predicate was that the karka, you know who owns it.
What?
So why would that apply to
you don't know. Here you don't even know who owns it. Here, right. The Goslin's been living there for a while.
Right, but it's cut crops. It's not karka.
It's possibly still.
Yes.
They cut it, they wrapped it up, took it to the market.
That's what we're saying, right? We're saying that make sure the guy is the one to cut it. Because if you go onto his land and cut it, it could be it's someone else's land, and you're considered the ganav.
But the karka problem is that you know who owns the karka. You don't know who owns the crops on the
karka. Yeah, the Gemara is saying, we know. The Gemara is saying, yeah, I mean, it's not so politically correct,
you
know, but the Gemara is saying.
From Itamar's field?
Yeah, the Gemara is saying it's an Eretz Yisrael. Stam Gazlanim, Stam Goy, who owns property in Eretz Yisrael, stole it from a Jew at some earlier point in time. So it's a presumption of Gzela. But the Goy doesn't have property rights. So in order for you to own it, you have to make sure he cuts it. And then you're Kona through Yish and Shina Risha. As Rashi points out, Karka in an Exeles, Kolomar, Eina Knuya Legazlan Bishum Yish. No Yish could give the Gazlan property rights in Karka. Dil Olam Becheskas Bailehi. Right? Karka always is considered to be in the Rishus of its true owners. Here's another nafkamina of this question of Ein Gzela Karkos. The Rambam in Hilchos Gzela Veda Perek Tes Lach Aleph writes, normally, if you steal metaltalin, I steal your car, and the car incurs damages through my usage, so I have to reimburse you for what value?
I have to
return the car plus reimburse you for the damages that I caused. Because the Gazlan gains some sort of property rights in the car. However, if the Ganav steals Karka, he steals your land, and then the land undergoes damage under his usage, he doesn't have to reimburse you for the damages because he never gained any property rights to have to reimburse you. But this is the Rambam here, for example, in Perek Tes. Hagozel Karka mechavero, im nishchisa me'eleha, hegon sheshat fanahar, or nisrafa be'ei sheyarda ben hashamayim, omer lo hareishel chalafanecha, he just gives the land back. Shehakarka becheskas baleha kayemes, ve'ein achrayes hefseda alav. Right, the karka is always considered to be in the rishus of the owner, and he has no the ganav has no liability. Mash ein hadin kein b'metaltalin.
Then why, if he improves it, do you have to pay for it?
What?
Then why, if he doesn't improve it, if he steals your land and improves it, and then goes back to you, do you have a bone for the
That's a different issue because maybe mashpiach, it's as if he's your shliach. That's how we're trying to interpret it. Okay, so if ain gzela lekarkos, then we have a real problem. How could the Gemara say amonu moav tiaru besichon, which seems to be about theft of land? The Meiri said that Gemara is midin gzela, but yet we say ain gzela lekarkos.
It's wonderful.
What? Who says? What?
And it's from Shem Hashem. It's not like it's going.
This is the question that the Pnei Yeshua also points out. That how could the Gemara be midin gzela if we say ein gzela lekarkos? Yeah, question? Puzzled?
Yeah,
it's a good question, right? Yeah. How can you say it's gzela? Okay, so here the Rashba steps in, and the Rashba gives us a new interpretation of the Gemara. Okay, this could be our third interpretation of how kibush melchama is working. Rashba starts on middle of page 8. V'kasha li yashmaitzin l'fi masha re'isi. L'Rashi l'tzasa mefarshim nochei nefesh, denir mi devreim kulam v'lekul yama shavoy lo kanile, ela l'achar yush. L'Rashi and all these mefarshim seem to be appealing to the principle of yush to justify kibush mochama. V'tmiyali, it's astonishing. De adarabba mashm li l'chora, de l'rava de amar de shavoy kanile, when Rava says that the victor gains rights, mishash shviyahu de kanile. It's immediately from the moment that he captures the property. Vafilu lifnei yush. Even if it's before yush. Okay? Brings one proof from the Gemara, but skip to the next underlying section. V'teida lecha. I'll prove this to you. Deha me'amo nemoav tiaru besichon yalfin amla. Our source is from Amo nemoav. V'hahi b'karkahi v'karka ba'alma inan exeles. V'lo shayich be'yush. Don't tell me it's based off yush because there's no concept of theft by karka. Okay. The imkain, chazaka degufo nami de maisinan mina. So if there's no theft for karka, then it must be that even the case of mobile property or stealing the person himself, afilu kodem yoshi. The rachmana amar de likni bechezkas milchama. It's a special gzeres hakasuv. That the victor has rights to what he achieves in battle. V'od, and moreover, You can never speak about somebody despairing on their own self. The Gemara spoke about the victor gaining property rights in the captives of war. A person never despairs on himself, so don't tell me that the principle here is yish. Okay. The ode of the last underlying section of that first paragraph. Dikra devayesha mimenu shevi miksiv beyish. The Torah never said anything about yish in the context of kibush machama. El adraba mashma demisha sheshavo nasa shvidide. The moment the captors come in, they gain property rights without even appealing to yish. So what's the Rashba arguing here? It's a new category. We're not invoking a previously known category of Aveda or a previously known category of Zela. It's a new category that the Torah develops of Kibush Mechama. Yeah. Spoils of war goes to the victor. It's a new Kenyan. Right? It's not reducible to any previous Kenyan. He says this is the answer to the Ravid's question. The Ravid says, how could you ever gain legitimate property? It's like Miata, Masha, Hiksha, Ravid, etc., etc. Ain't no Kasha Klal. That's not even a question. Devadai im lokho bim melchama kina'o. Velo koi bahade bedina. Vidina, you can't take him to Bezdin to sue for your freedom. She'eino doma chezkas melchama lemachzik bo begezel. You can't compare the spoils of war to theft. V'teida lecha, the ilu bas ledamos chezkas melchama lechezkas gezel. If you want to compare the two, gezel am melchama. Heich tiaru amon emoa besichon. How could the Gemara have said amon emoa tiaru besichon? What would have happened? You'll say that Sichon illicitly stole property from Amon. Had Amon sued Sichon and Bezdin, Bezdin would have given the property rights back to Amon. And then Bnei Yisrael never would have been able to claim that we could conquer Amon via the conquest of Sichon. It's just a fake. Right? If Amon retained the rights over themselves legally, then there's no way that Bnei Yisrael would have been allowed to conquer them through the conquest of Sichon. If it's not enforceable in Bezdin, it can't be some...
If they want to pay Sichon and Amon back.
Yeah, so he doesn't like that. He thinks that if it's like...
He wouldn't agree then with the Yish Besvarim, because it's not a matter of Yish or not.
Very good. Excellent. We'll see that in a second. The Rishonim who follow this Rashba said explicitly, once you take the Rashba, so we solve... doesn't depend on Yish at all. It's not Gezela, so of course it could apply to Karka as well. I'm looking just in the last line. The last line of the Rashba, Alavada kina amran, de kol shelokcho b'cheskas melchama, bein begufo, bein b'mamono, kina'o sha'atora zichzalo. Torah gives him rights. And the Rambam is explicit in a tshuva. The Rambam was asked about looters, and again, here the assumption is, we'll look here at the bottom of page 8. So let's develop this Rashba for a minute. So far we know it's different from Gzela, A, because you don't need Yush, doesn't depend on despair. So this makes our discussion earlier, whether Yish is subjective or objective, a moot discussion. It doesn't depend on Yish. It will allow you to have property rights in Karkos, even though Gzela won't give you property rights in Karkos. Still has to be explained. Third, even though someone who takes something through theft gains property rights, he has to return the object. If you gain something through Kibush Melchama, you could argue, you have no obligation to return the property. Torah gives you the rights to it. The Rambam says this explicitly, this last point, in Siman Reish Tes and Atshuva. She'ela, ma yomer adonenu, bidvar mi shekana min habodzizim sifrei hekdesh. Somebody bought from looters sifrei hekdesh, probably sifrei Torah. She'hayu shayachem la'echem ribati ha'knesi o'shebe iram. Ha'im kana o'samo kofen o'salach ziram. That's a Jew bought sifrei Torah that were looted from another base Knesset. Does he have to return them, or does he have rights? The im kofinoso, if he has to return them, hanosnim lo hamaos shebehem kana. So does the purchaser get reimbursed at least for what he paid, or does he lose his investment?
This is not a situation of war.
So he says, misha kana min habozizim. You bought them from looters. Who are these looters? So that's what the Rambam answers. The Rambam says it depends who these looters are. Look at the top of page 9. Hatshuva. Im zu habiza nasa bipkuda sultan, if the sultan is the one who legitimized or authorized the looting, hare kina'o ubatel din hektish, then the purchaser owns them and the shul that previously owned them loses their rights. Bafilu kli hamikdash im nevazazu, batla kedushasam. Even if Goyim came and destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, the Goyim would gain property rights in the Beis HaMikdash. Amru bo pritzim v'chiluluha. The Goyim came and they destroyed it. So he's saying, if it's state-sponsored, it's legitimized by the government, then the purchaser gains full property rights, and he doesn't even have to reimburse, he doesn't have to return the sparm at all. Aval im nivazazu shalobir shus sultan, but if it was just petty theft, then yishba ben akita shefetz kama hotzi, v'yito v'yachzor zeh sefer limkomo. Then he has to return the sefer Torah to the shul, he could ask for reimbursement on what he paid, but he has to give it back. So the Rambam here seems to be distinguishing, if it's kibush mochama, you don't have to give it back. If it's gazela, you do have to give it back. And along the way, we get the Rambam's definition of kibush mochama, is that it's defined by whether it's sponsored
state.
By the
no,
state
why would
or not.
Back? Why don't you just keep it because of the shush change and then pay for it?
So one thing that seems to be part of this Rambam is that hekdish has a stronger kind of ownership than, yeah, that's part of this Rambam. There's another tshuva. What?
Government.
Yes.
What if it's a tribe in Iraq and the head of the...
So how do you define a state?
Right.
That's the question. So we'll get this in a minute.
Well, what if the program is not state-sponsored?
Also, this is the emotional part. How do I sleep at night knowing that the Sefer Torah I have in my living room says the name of a shul?
What do you mean? It's legitimate.
Read the Rambam over and over.
Yeah.
Make you feel better.
That's right. Well, it's legitimate, right? I mean, Jews who took, you know, all these Sefer Torah were looted in Eastern Europe, and they were brought here and they were given to different shuls. What, you think it's a stolen Sefer Torah?
If there's a name and address on it and a family wants to claim it, then yes.
Maybe. I mean, but you're not going to say that, you know, these are all tentative kinyanim. There's like a reset button at a certain point. And there's one reset button of Aveda, and there's another reset button. There's a terminus to Bailas from Kibush Machama.
You can go to the king's field that he appropriated and take his arobos.
That's what it's not. Right, exactly. Yeah. We'll see that in a second, actually. We'll come back to that Gemara in Sukkah, because what if the Goyim conquered Eretz Israel? The assumption of that Gemara was Karkin and Exelis. But let's say it was the Christian Crusaders conquered the entire land through Kibush Mochama. Maybe then you don't have to worry about. So we'll get to that in a second. The Tajbates is writing in the 14th century. So he was asked a similar question to the Rambam. Let's look here in the second source, the top source on page 9 after the Rambam. She'ela, Reuven shalach svarim b'safon echad me'ever layam. So Reuven sent svarim on a boat over the sea. V'asafon ahu nilkad. The boat was captured by pirates. Ubo anios eva v'shalulu hakol, ubazzu ishlo machru kol hashalal be'ir achas. So the boat was captured and they sold the loot in some other city. Uvashimin v'kanam in hashalal hahu, uvasocham kana sefer echad. And a Jew ended up buying one of the svarim that was sent on this boat. And then lachar yamin b'shanim, Reuven, and you know, Reuven finds his sefer in Shimon's house. He said, "Oh, where'd you get it?" He said, "Oh, I bought it from these pirates who..." Mm-hmm. Exactly. So who has property rights?
You can't argue that this is
Milchama. Why not? So look what he says. And here we get his definition of Kibush Milchama. Tshuva. The underlined section. Im habozizim, heim sheba'im mimalchus, sheyesh cheirum beina ubein hamalchus shen hanivazizim. If the pirates are from a foreign country that's at war with your country... Okay. So if it came from pirates from a foreign country that's at war, zacha halokeach b'mekcho, ve'ein lebal ha-sefer din alav klum.
It's a state-sponsored war.
Right. Meaning if it was Muslim pirates who stole it from a Christian boat, then the Muslim pirates gain full property rights.
So jihad is an act of war?
If it's two states that are at war with each other, and the thieves came from the opposing state, that's kibush mochama, not gazela.
But it's obvious. So
it's not obvious, because you could have said pirateering is theft.
No, but there's a difference between, this occurred in the colonial period. There was pirates which were completely independent of any
mercenaries, right?
And then they were
right. So his definition is has to be a state that's at war with you.
So if ISIS takes your silverware, somebody who's acting at
Kibush Milchama.
That's Kibush Milchama.
Correct. Yeah. But if you know the state of New Jersey,
the Somalis go over and take over your boat as you're passing in Africa, they keep it. You know, that's
so for the Rambam, the definition seems to be state sponsored, right? If it's Bipkudas as Sultan. For the Tajbeits, it seems to be that the definition is if it comes from a country that's at war with your country. Okay, that's the definition. Yeah. Just look at the last line. Just look at the last line of this Tajbeits. The im elu hasholalim. Hem mehamalchus, if they're from your very own country, ela sheyatu lishlol shalal v'lavus baz shalobratan amelech, v'zeh yeshlo din listim mizuyim, and they're thieves. Right, so it's clear this in the Tashmish.
So we're not even if you don't meet the criteria where it was seized on the basis of this special kinyan, and whether Rashba or Hizba, even if you don't meet that criteria, it still would be the other guy should have it because it's geza with shina rishus.
Okay, but is there a chiv to reimburse him at least?
So but it would definitely be yours, though. You wouldn't have to return the safer.
You could say that, yeah. You could say that.
So getting
but
back,
the question is the reimbursement. Okay. That's
getting back,
and if it's gzela, it depends if there's yiyush. Right? Okay. So it depends if there's yiyush. And we saw Rishonim, we said there's no yiyush by Svarim. Right? So we'll see this explicitly in the... Look here in the next tshuva. The next Tajbeit is explicit about this. Another case. Okay, look at the next tshuva. She'ela, she'alta, you asked. Yisrael shehaya sholeach sefer hamufkad biyada b'sfina achas me'eretz Edom l'eretz Yishmael. A Jew was selling svarim from Christian lands, Eretz Edom, l'eretz Yishmael to Muslim lands. Ve'amdu al hasfina shebayim Yishmaelim u'bazazu hakol, etc. And again, it ended up in a Jew's hands. So tshuva, look at the underlined section. Techilas kol davar. Oh, sorry. So the shoel asked, oh, maybe it depends on whether there's yiyush and whether there's yiyush by svarim, right? That's what he asked. So the Tajbeit's answer is tshuva. Tchilas kol davar yesh lomar shim hayinu tzrichim liyush but nidon hazel below safek yesh kan yush. Says if we needed yush, I think in this case there is yush. Umiyu kol zehu afilu hayinu tzrichim liyush b'shavoy. Aval harashba. And he quotes the Rashba in Gittin who says no, kibush mochama is a separate kinyan which is not dependent upon yush. Right? So even without yush, the person gains property rights. Okay. And he quotes the Gemara in Sanhedrin. So he says, oh, this other rabbi who was discussing this case, he did a very good job trying to figure out if there's yush on Svarim or not. But he says, Elasha anitema, I'm astonished, lama irvev dvarav, v'hutzrach lo shasvarim, why does he get all confused and start talking about yush when everybody knows the Rashba already figured out that kibush mochama doesn't depend on yush. Yeah, so it doesn't depend on yush according to this view.
And if they can talk a land, let's say Israel, then what do you do there's no shmita or anything.
So you don't need yush according to this. What about conquered? What if Eretz Yisrael is conquered through kibush mochama by foreign enemies? Okay, so we saw the Gemara. The Gemara says, have the guy cut the hadasim, so you're kona through yush and shina rishos. The Sefer Mitzvos Gadol quotes an interesting shita. This is a smag. Or Moshe Mikutzi, one of the Balei Tosfos. So he says, look, in Eretz Yisrael nowadays, there's always this question, are you chayiv in Shumus and Maestros? Right? Because maybe there's Kedusha Sa'aretz. So before you eat fruits in Eretz Yisrael, you have to be mafresh. He says, a great way to get out of a suffix is to buy produce from a goy. Because we say that a goy in Eretz Yisrael is not chayiv to separate Shumus and Maestros. Okay? Look here, the smag, Sefer Mitzvos Gadol on page 10. Zuhi takana gedolu darm be'eretz Yisrael bezman hazeh. This is in the 13th century. I have a good way of helping out Jews in Eretz Yisrael. Likach mitvuas hagoy, achar shenigmar, just buy the produce once it's already fully taken care of by the guy. Ki afilu mitvuas Yisrael, ein sham chiv ele midrabanan. Drabanan drab yosi v'shal goy, pato legamri. Everybody knows there's no chiv chumus and isos from a guy. Aye, what might you say? V'ein lahachmir v'lomar shegoyim gozle karkahem. Don't tell me that the goy is chayv in shumus ma'isros, since it's not really his land, because in gzeil karkos, yes, he's occupying some land somewhere, but he has no property rights, so that doesn't exempt him from shumus ma'isros. Shaharei kena'om v'kibush. Because the goy does gain property rights in Eretz Yisrael through kibush mochama. So even though karka in gzeles, the kibush mochama karka could be appropriated. Again, the Magen Avram says something similar in our case.
PLO, so the PLO owns
Well, it was reconquered since then.
So
I mean, people.
No, it
would...
wasn't reconquered. It was given by the UN without an act of war.
Well, no, it was an act of war that
right. There was an act of war in 48, and 67.
So what did they do?
Where they attempted to take it all back, and they were unsuccessful.
Robert, what did they do?
There was a Mohammed, and then in 67 also was a Mohammed.
So what did they do during the time?
So this just encourages, so the Arabs that follow the mosque, they're justified in trying to take it back by an act of war.
Well, are they justified?
That's the only way they can get it back.
To gain property rights off the halacha?
Yeah.
I don't think they're so worried about getting. Yeah, I don't think they're going to the Rabbanut.
Even the Datilumi
aren't going to the Rabbanut.
This is encouraging acts of war.
Is this the rationale for Heta Mechira?
I mean, I don't know if it's encouraging an act of war, but it does say there's a certain irony here that a conquest of an act of war is more permissible than an act of theft.
If your ancestors lived in Haifa for 800 years and you want your land back, the way to do it is by
Kibbutz
order
Mecha.
Of the state.
Yeah.
To go to war.
Correct.
You have to read
the
Robert,
is this
yeah.
the rationale for Hatta Mechira?
Right?
Is this the rationale for Hatta
Mechira? Hatta Mechira is different because that's a voluntary sale. A voluntary sale is better than even, it's not karkin and exelus. One second. The Mogen Avraham says, who I did nowadays, right, maybe if the Goyim conquered land in Eretz Yisrael, you don't have to have the Goy cut the Hadassim because he has property rights in the karka.
What they do in the time of Bayis Sheni, when they didn't, you know, they were conquered, there was the base of Mikdash. So what they do with Kibbutz Ma'asros?
Yeah, so I think we say that the Kibbutz Mocham Eretz Yisrael lost its Kedusha at the time.
So they didn't.
It's a whole discussion. It's a whole separate issue in Shumos Ma'asros. What does Kedusha Saaretz depend on? Really? Okay, let's go for 10 more minutes. We'll cover some interesting discussions. The Ravid in Bava Kama Kufi Gimel Mem Beis says explicitly, he quotes as a steer in two Gemaras. One Gemara seems to imply that Gezel Akum is Aser, right? Of course, it's Aser to steal from a non-Jew. But the Gemara in Sanhedrin implies that it's Mutter to steal from a non-Jew.
Mutter.
Okay. The Ravid here says, the second class source on page 10, V'hadar minan hachadil divri hakol gazlan Aser. The Gemara in Bava Kama says Aser to steal from a non-Jew. The Hassan b'Sanhedrin Arminam Gana v'Gazan v'Chen Yifas Toar Yisrael b'Goy Mutter says that it's permissible Yifas Toar Gana v'Gazan is Mutter to take from a non-Jew. So he says, isn't it a contradiction? No. Hahu b'Kibush Milchama Ka'amar Ke'en Yifas Toar. It's like you were suggesting earlier. There's a special permissibility in the context of war. Kidichziv v'Yachalto es Kol Ha'amim v'Darshinan Le'hacha b'Zman Shehem Mesurin b'Yadcha. The Gemara says you could consume the other nations when they're given over to you. Now I wonder if in this Ravid, it's a little tricky, do you think the Ravid here is trying to give us a rationale for why Kibush Milchama is more justified than Gzela? This is Harold's point almost, right? Why is it that if to simply appropriate someone else's land, that doesn't give you property rights? But go to war and seize it, that gives you rights.
Because if we win the war, God directs.
So I wonder
Hashem's
if that's what the Ravid's trying to say.
It's Hashem's hand.
It's like almost like, oh, in war you could assume that there's Hashkacha as the victor. Right, the victor has divine imprimatur.
Right, and if you didn't win the war, God won't give it.
Right. So like, that's what the Samar Rebbe said. I'm not advocating. I'm simply presenting the Ravid.
Why wouldn't that apply to Gezel too?
It's your fault.
Why wouldn't that apply to Gezel too? If God wanted me to steal.
So I think you'll say no. You're petty theft. The Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't get involved in. I think there is a sense that the Ribbono Shel Olam gets involved for large scale things, but for individual things, the Ribbono Shel Olam stays out of it. Well, Hashkacha Pratis. Okay, maybe you'll go that route even. You'll say maybe it's only for justified wars and. But I think the Ravid himself is trying to give us already a rationale for why Kibush Milchama should work. The Dvar Avram, this is the Kovner Rav, he lived in the beginning of the 20th century. He has an interesting discussion to try to pin down Kibush Mechama. He wonders, how does Kibush Mechama work? Nistapakti, bottom page 10. Behad de Kovesh Kone be Kibush Mechama. I'm a Supuk, I have a suffix, I'm not sure. I wonder. Ayin Gitin Lamidches, the Gemara we saw. Imhu Atzmo Kilomer Hakibush Habegam Maisa Kinin Chadash. Nosaf ala kinyanim haregilim. Is this a new kinyan in the sense that rak b'mochama umiyad shenichbisha haaretz? And the moment that the victor captures the land lifnei hamenatzeach, in front of the conquered, kederech hakvisha kvar kana es kol haaretz v'chol asher ba. Is it that the moment the conquerors come and they win, so they gain property rights in everything that's in the land? Or is it that the condition of milchama is such that it allows the victor to make a separate maisa kinyan on all the property that's in the land? And when does this kinyan go into effect? The moment George W. Bush gets on the aircraft carrier and says mission accomplished, so then the United States gains property rights in the assets of the people they conquered? Or is it that no, milchama allows the conqueror to go ahead and make a maisa kinyan on this article of clothing, on this car, etc.? Is it a license to do a separate maisa kinyan? Or is the kibush milchama itself a kind of a kinyan which gives the victor property rights? He says he's not sure. Okay, but if it works in the way that it itself is a maisa kinyan, then that works well with the Rashba, that this is its own category. It doesn't relate to other kinyanim at all. All right?
Why?
No, I think he's saying, I think he just, you know, he'll say that it's, we'll call it Gezel, but it's not actually theft. I think Mar refers to it as Gezel, but Gezel the Mechama is its own category. I think that's what the Ravid would say. Okay, so now I want to close with a discussion of, could we get a better sense of the mechanics which underlie the Kibush Mechama? So we said, okay, it's not Aveda, it's not Gezela. It's its own category. Maybe according to the Ravid, the reason why it works is because it's Hashkacha, the Rabbeinu Shlom says, I license the victor to take that property. But could we try to give motivate a better understanding of what might underlie why Kibush Mochama works so effectively? Why it would be stronger than other Kinyanim? So the Rishonim struggle with this. On the top of page 11, we have a comment from Rabbeinu Tam and Sefer HaYashar. Rabbeinu Tam tries to argue is that Kibush Mechama is almost like a consensual transaction. It's almost a transaction by the consent of the conquered. Why? Because they're so happy to get away with their lives intact. It's like Agav Onse Gamaru Makni. Right? They like, oh, we just want to get away, and we're happy to give away our property to the victors. And that's like the assumption. Give me my life, take my property. I don't know.
I'm not even going to comment.
But this we saw, because you don't like it because under duress.
Your money or your life?
No, you don't like...
What if they didn't get away with their lives?
Well,
Jack Benny was.
Look here at the Rabbeinu Tam and Sefer Yashar, commenting on this Gemara in Gittin. Vayesh mimenu shevi. Amar Rebbe, afal pi she'in karka nigzeles. Even though there could be no theft by karka, nevertheless, karka is transacted through Kibush Mechama. Al yidei shehu nitan lahariga. Since this person is going to be killed, v'derech milchama kimo tal yuhu v'zavin v'zvine zvini. It's as if the Gemara says, if you put a gun to someone's head and say, sell me your property or I'll kill you, and he consents under duress, that's considered a consent halachically. You don't like this in general.
I love it. I think
it's nice. Are you being facetious?
I think so.
Okay. But kivan dekatli, but since there's the threat of death, Agav onse gamaru makni. So that itself is what motivates somebody to want to get rid of their property. Right? So it's not like aveda, it's not gazela. It's better, it's with the consent of the conqueror. Right. That's kind of what he's suggesting.
So they have to say to you,
no, they don't have to say.
So you might say that it's assumed. Look here, after the three dots. Dibirshusohi, uviyado lohamis ulahachio, since the conqueror has the ability to kill him or leave him alive, gamaru makni. that creates a condition where someone's willing to consent to give away his cargo. It's clever. I think it's a very, it's a clever way of trying to interpret Kibush Mochamo. It's almost as if it's a transaction with the consent of the...
Media of the mind.
Of the, yeah. It's schwer if you don't like consent under duress. This is one way maybe of interpreting why the Kibush Mochamo would be more effective than Gezela and Aveda, even though it sounds like it's a bit of a trick. Another way of understanding it, this seems to be the Rambam's interpretation in Hilchos Melachim, and it works nicely with the Rambam's interpretation in the Tshuva that we saw. The reason why Kibush Mochamo works is it's through Dina de Malchusa Dina. Halacha always recognizes the law of the land, so maybe Kibush Mochamo works through the law of the land. How could it work through the law of the land? Look at the Rambam here is talking in Perek Dalet of Hilchos Melachim. This Perek is all about the rights of a king to set law. For example,
it's eminent domain.
Okay, that's good. That's what Dina Malchusa is, kind of, right? The government kind of has property rights over everything. You know, the Melech, the Rambam tells us in the beginning of the Perek, the Melech could seize assets as at his will, like you said.
And the new government is the
winner. Halacha Yud, Kol Ha'aret Shekovesh, Harei Hi Shelo. Anything that the king conquers belongs to him. V'nothein La'avadav U'la'anshe Ha'mochama Kefi Masha Yirtza. And he could distribute it as he wants. So the Rambam just talks about the right of a king to distribute assets of the spoils of war as Dina de Malchus Adina. Now that's not exactly our case. Our case wants to know, well, why does the victor have rights in the spoils of war? The Rambam is just saying, why does the king have the right to redistribute those? Okay. Rav Vazir says, oh, Kol Harugei Melech, everything in this parak is Bechlal Dina de Malchus Adina. Okay, so it's not exactly our case. But the Radvaz in a tshuva applies Dina de Malchus Adina to our case exactly. Okay, look at the bottom of page 11. David ibn Zimra, the Radvaz lived in the 16th century. She'ela, Yore na moret tzedek le'inyana de Dina. We want your psak in the following case. Re'uven hayelo rishus b'chanut b'hava haribis v'ir acheres asher tachas memshelas melech echad. So Reuven had a money lending business and a bank in one shtetl. Uliyamim onos, garmu vigarshu hayyudim mehir hahi, vigarshu hamalvin betocha hafecha. So they expelled all the Jews. Vahi hayom ninaru rishayim in haaretzahi, vikavsha haapifior, then the Pope came along, and he conquered the land. Vacharze kavsha dukas, and then some bishop or something came and conquered it from the Pope. Asher hayom moshel al hair hahi, so now this bishop or whatnot, this duke is in charge of the city. The Hershe Hayehudim Lader Bemachuso, he allowed Jews to come back. Ubo Vidaru Zek Hamashanim. Vihine Hayom Hirshe Hadukas Hanal, Lishimon Lahavos Pachanos Shnaim Vishlosha Shanim, Achar Shehilva Shimon Hanal. Sorry, Vishanim. Achar Shehilva Shimon Hanal. Baru Uvein Vomerli Limish Barabachora. So the Jews were expelled from the town. It changed hands a few times through Kibush Mochama. A new king came. He gave Reuven's bank to Shimon. So Shimon, you're in charge of the bank now, and you get all the gains. Reuven comes back. He says, "Li mishpat abachor, that was my bank. I should have property rights." V'toein shehichzik mikodem. V'atya tayir ner lahodos hadinim mitz. They asked the Radvaz, who has the rights to the bank? Reuven, who owned it 3 years ago before it changed hands through all these battles, or Shimon? So what do we say? Shimon, why? Or, and Kibush Mochama. So, Tshuva Hadinim Shimon, the Kaimalan Dina de Machusa Dina, Vafilu Besa Mamish, Sheyarish Me'av Me'aviv, even if it was his own home, Shemachar HaMelech LeShimon, the king came and he sold it to Shimon, Kana Shimon, the Chok HaMelachim, who? This is the norm, this is the law of kings. Kishelochdim HaMedina Bekoach HaMelchama, when they capture a town through battle, kol habatim v'asodos v'akramim heim shelo, they belong to the king. So it's like when the Nazis came and conquered Eastern Europe, the chok hamalachim is that the victor gets to keep the property. V'gam ha'am heim lo lemas oved. Hilkach afal pishel lo girshim yisham ha'yehudim v'ratza hamelech harishon, etc. Nevertheless, Shimon gets to keep it midin dina de machus adina. Okay. So what's interesting here is that he's extending.
Shimon doesn't have to do anything for the
right.
value of his house.
Exactly. It's totally been expropriated.
At least he had all the ownership.
Well, what's interesting here is that here we're applying Dina the Malchusa Dina not to the laws within a particular Malchus, but to there's the international assumption about how the laws of battle work. Right? What did he say? He said, "The chok ha-melachim hu kishelochtim ha-medina b'koach mochama kol abotim v'asadus v'akam shalahem." Right? The presumption between kings is that the victor gets to take the spoils of war. Right? So if you apply Dina de Malchusa Dina as what's underlying the Kibosh Mochama, I think, and this is what I was responding to earlier, that maybe Vizman Hazet would no longer apply. Because the Geneva Convention says there no longer is a Chok HaMalachim. We know that property that's seized from private citizens in battle is considered to be illicit or stolen goods. What? Okay, but you say there's still international condemnation, right? And this would maybe solve Harold's Eretz Yisrael problem as well.
Sure it does. He says, Dina de Malchusa, not an international convention.
But he says this is the Chok HaMalachim. I didn't take that to mean that this is the laws that's understood between kings.
So if you're not a signatory to the convention,
yeah. Right, so then we have to figure out what... look, I think Dina de Malchusa, if it's Dina de Malchusa Dina, then it raises even more interesting questions. And someone pointed this out, who pointed this out earlier. Okay. Well?
I just want to answer the question. Go ahead.
Okay, but how do we define what's considered a Malchus? So in the Gemara, actually, we say that a Malchus is defined by coinage. Whoever underwrites the currency, that's considered to be the presiding authority. So I think this raises super fascinating questions. Like, let's say France goes to war with Germany today. Half a decade ago, that would be considered to be kibush, right? That would be a kibush amalchus, because Dina Malchus Adina, it's two separate kingdoms going to war. But if you say that currency is what really determines, and it's the European Union which underwrites the currency of the euro, you'll say, by today's standards, that's no longer Dina de Malchus Adina. Exactly, it's like two states going to war in America.
Now, currency is evidence of a legitimacy. It doesn't really mean currency. That doesn't mean that Ben Franklin is the only one that can tell us what to do.
No, but I mean, who underwrites the currency system?
Department of the Treasury.
But who runs the Treasury for Europe? It's a European Union controlled agency. Not a country-specific agency. That's the point.
Between two members of the European Union, it's inevitable that the currency would dissolve with it.
So it'd fall apart with it.
We have an understanding, for example, I don't know if the Nazis had currency or not, that the Nazi government would be considered okay?
Sure.
I mean, were they a legitimate government in their time?
No, I mean, pre-Geneva Convention, then the...
So if you think it's Dina de Malchusa, before? Okay, there you go.
So if they captured stuff, then they have a right to it?
That's all right. So traditionally, that would constitute classic Kibosh Mochama. And that means that Jews would lose their claim to the homes and assets that they had in Eastern Europe before the war. Right? That's the traditional view. Right? Maybe you'll say there's no Yiyush on Sfarim, no Yiyush on the Rembrandt. But the Rashba then tells us that Yiyush is irrelevant for Kibosh Mochama.
Struck by, you know, a bully like, understating it for the Nazi regime coming in, they could just do whatever they want.
No, the point here is that it's not about how okay or not okay it is. Kibosh Mochama seems to be like its own category, right? Debbie, you wanted to...
Yeah, no, I just wanted to say what you're saying. We use taxes today as an identification of country.
If what?
Taxes.
Oh, as had a. Who do you pay your taxes to?
You know, French people pay taxes to France. Germans.
You could look at it that way. The Gemara doesn't use taxes as the Gemara has a concept of mas, right? But the Gemara assumes that the currency is like a more legitimate way of establishing sovereignty.
Actually,
because there are all these thugs who collected taxes on their own, right? I mean.
In certain
taxes was a function of what you could enforce, not necessarily who the legitimate, but who underwrote the currency. That was a sign of your autonomous rule.
In some individual European countries, they have, they're part of the euro, but some of the pensions
like England,
are specific to that.
Like England was part of the European Union, but they had the pound.
But, so they have, but they have,
they have their own private
picture of their
prime. France has their French kings.
Yeah, but it's fungible because it goes from one
century
to the other.
War and the Geneva Convention, we're having much different view than the last 2000
if you, but I think that only affects this discussion if you assume it's Dina de Malchus Adina, that Kibosh Mohammed is grounded in an assumed consent about international law.
If you don't say Kibosh Mohammed depends on Dina de Malchus Adina,
then it would be irrelevant.
It would still apply?
I would think so.
So
the it's like the Torah creates its own opinion.
So those other opinions that are based on Jezebel or Yeish or anything like that would say, I don't have the right to claim my property that was taken.
Assuming there was, according to them, assuming there was Yeish. According to the Rashba, even if that was Yeish.
Why is that this
far
irrevocable Yeish? Like somebody can now decide.
Well, the Rashba thinks you don't need Yeish for Kibosh Mohammed.
No, I said, but if I'm saying it's not Kibosh Mohammed.
Oh, right.
And it's going to end up paying back.
But, correct.
So let's why you give back this firm because
it's an economic
interest? No, so why you? They thought, I think it looked good for them. But let me close with one other suggestion. I want to make a. I think there's a different principle which underlies. And with this, we'll close. I think there may be a different principle which underlies the kinyan of Kibosh Mohammed, and this touches more on the essence of what ownership is, although I'm weak on, I have to look for more proofs to substantiate this more broadly. But it seems that you could argue that it's true that the Torah establishes kinyanim, which gives you property rights in things that you buy, voluntary transfers. The Torah even gives you property rights in stolen objects if it had Yish and Shina Rishus. Torah gives you property rights through Aveda, etc. But property rights always requires some institution that's going to enforce the ownership of private property. So it's true that I own my car, but my ownership of my car assumes that there's a Besdin, there's a government that's willing to enforce the private property that I own. Without that enforcement agency, the whole notion of bailus becomes meaningless. So in most cases, somebody comes to my karka, they steal my karka. So we say, "Ein karka nigzeles," because the government, if they know that you own this land, they'll kick you out. You're a trespasser. You steal my car, so it's gezela, but there's a debt that you owe to me to reimburse me because everyone knows that you stole my car. But what happens when the whole institution of government enforcement and the whole society, this whole social structure which recognizes and enforces private property comes apart at the moorings? So one can say when that falls apart, then the whole institution of bailus becomes unhinged as well, and you lose your property rights. So a kibosh mohama seems to be that, yes, of course there's the notion of private property and individual rights, but when the society itself comes apart and there's no agency that could enforce private property, then bailus itself comes apart and you lose your right to those assets. So just one thing that I want to invoke in support of this idea is Sangat the Meiri quotes in Gittin Nintas B'Shem HaGaonim, and he says that Kibosh Mohama will not apply if a government comes, conquers another country, and sends half the inhabitants into exile and keeps half the inhabitants. It won't apply if a king appropriates one person's property or a second person's property but keeps most of the property intact. Kibosh Mohama only applies, look here in the Meiri, in Gittin and Tess, after the last three dots. This is page 12. Umikol Makom, this is the last three dots in the Meiri. Malchus shenichnisa b'malchus acheres, so one kingdom comes and takes over another kingdom. Ad she'okra ha'achas eschaverta ligamri, they entirely uproot it. Not just that they sent some people into exile and appropriated some land. V'hoshiv acherim bimkomam, hare zu malchus chadasha, v'kansa kinyan gamur. V'chmo she'amru amun emoav tiyaru v'sichon, u'mekcho kayim, v'ein lebailim klum afilu lo nisyayishu. It's only if there's a total upheaval of social and governmental control, then you'll say that Kibosh Mohammed goes into effect. Because the way Kinyan Kibosh Mohammed works is that when there's a total dissolution of the previous society, then of course Bylus falls away because Bylus always assumes an agency that's going to enforce the private property rights of the owners.
That's also to do with Malthus Beamer. I turned up a check to talk about paying taxes. If he charges one person taxes and another person not taxes,
but here I'm not so much worried about the arbitrariness of it, that it's not lawful.
Everything's unhinged.
Right, it's that there's a total decomposure of society. Then that's you'll say that there's no more bylaws, and the new and the conqueror has. What? Okay, it says that they necra hamalfas legamri.
That's one of the.
I don't know if he means.
Of the Geneva Convention, you can't do whole revolution.